We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We're about a month away from the NFL draft. Now, many teams, they'll have different season outlooks at that point, but with free agency effectively over, a number of offenses have really added players that hope, add hope at least, for improvements in 2024. We'll talk about five of those teams today on the RotoWire Fantasy Football. Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast, sponsored by On Demand DFS, where you could draft your dream lineup from over 5,000 NFL legends and today's stars using real historical data to simulate the action. I'm Jim Coventry. I'm joined, as always, by Anthony Servino. We'll be doing this podcast on the platform you're listening to every Monday. Remember to follow Anthony at The Real NFL Guru, and you can find me over at Jim Coventry NFL. As we said earlier in this show, we will talk about five offenses that seem to be the most improved after free agency. And Anthony, we are going to go right to the Atlanta Falcons. It's a quarterback-driven league. They added Kirk Cousins, but we're also going to add in some other players. They added two receivers here, Darnell Mooney, Rondale Moore. They didn't lose anybody of significance. Jonnu Smith was a rotational tight end. Arthur Smith overused him in some ways. Mac Hollins, situational deep threat, big upgrade with Mooney. Desmond Ridder, obviously with Cousins, there was no need to keep him in the house. So in terms of the adds and losses, it was just the ledger side was on the plus. Before we get into the breaking this down, I think at almost, it's never going to be equal to the quarterback, but an almost equal move was bringing in offensive coordinator Zach Robinson, who had coached with Sean McVay. Now, we have to be careful. When we bring a coach from a tree, it doesn't always mean that same offense will be in place, the same success will follow. Sometimes it may take a while. Sometimes it happens right away. So there's some uncertainty. But what we do know is this, Anthony. We don't have Arthur Smith. We don't have a ton of running. This is going to be a varied offense. We'll talk about a lot of components. I want to hear your initial thoughts about how significantly the Atlanta offense will be upgraded.
I'm extremely excited about the Atlanta Falcons, and I'm one of those people that the past few years I've been excited about them, but I was always pumping the brakes when it came to the quarterback position. I don't have to do that anymore. Kirk Cousins, we already know what he can do. He made a lot of noise in Washington. He you know, had an even better career in Minnesota. And now he can come to Atlanta and give this team the quarterback that they have not had since prime Matt Ryan. And with all of the offensive additions you just talked about, I think the offensive line is up and coming. I would say they're a top 5 to 8 unit in the NFL. And the defense last year, they had a few high points. This team could potentially all come together. And when it comes to the coaches, I know that there were guys like Belichick out there and Vrabel out there. But Raheem Morris, what's unique about him is he does have some experience on the offensive side of the ball, even though he's a defensive coach. And then they bring over Robinson to run the offense. I absolutely love what the Falcons have done this offseason. I think they could potentially pop.
So let's stop and talk about Cousins, as you mentioned, for a moment. First of all, those who are worried about the Achilles injury, I don't think there's any reason for concern. An Achilles injury saps explosiveness. Well, Kirk Cousins at 36 years old doesn't have more than two seasons with 125 plus rushing yards. He's not a explosive player. He's a pocket quarterback. And so there is no concern in my mind about his health. What I do want to point out, Kirk Cousins played in Minnesota under Kevin O'Connell. Kevin O'Connell was a disciple of Sean McVay, whereas now we know Zach Robinson, the offensive coordinator, is. So my guess is terminology, scheme, it's probably going to be very similar to what Cousins dealt with in Atlanta, because sometimes we have to worry about a learning curve for quarterbacks. I don't think that is in play. I think Cousins seamlessly moves into the spot. Now let's transition over. We'll get to the running backs later, but the receiving options. So we're looking at Drake London, Darnell Mooney, and Rondale Moore. And if there is a more classic alpha than Drake London, there are probably not seven more of those in the league who fit that role like him. The big-bodied X receiver can line up on the line. Very high first-round NFL pick. When he was utilized, which wasn't often in his first 2 years, he was very productive. We knew his home-road splits. Atlanta threw the ball more at home for whatever reason, and London put up great numbers. But I think that for Kirk Cousins, Drake London's not only going to be the possession guy, but he is going to run routes at all levels of the field. Drake London is such a massive upgrade on his value, but the numbers his first 2 years, he doesn't have more than like 905 yards. So Drake London, in my mind, could easily end up as a top 12 receiver if this offense that is being installed clicks at all. Thoughts on Drake London's stock in Atlanta?
You know, when you look at London's first 2 years, the body work when it comes to fantasy points per game has not been great. Wide receiver 42 and 43, respectively. That's not on Drake London or the pedigree of player he is. It's more of the system and the quarterback he was playing within. Now we add the new OC. Now we add Kirk Cousins, who we know can support an elite fantasy asset at wide receiver. And, you know, depending on where you're getting Drake London, where you're willing to draft him, I believe his current ADP is roughly right around 23 to 26. I would have to say I'm in on him. Like you said, top 12 wide receiver ceiling. It is a big jump from what we've seen the first 2 years. But again, we have to kind of wipe away the first 2 years of memory that we have of Drake London, because the complete situation is now changed. So I'm all in.
I'll point this out, that when Arthur Smith was calling the shots, Drake London wasn't seeing more than 110 targets. Yep. That goes back to the A.J. Brown days in Tennessee. A.J. Brown, and I know, again, he missed some time and out again, but he never saw more than 110 targets. So in this world where you're coming with a potential Ram-style passing attack, you are going to see those pass targets for Drake London go from that 110 into that 140, 150 range. And I don't think that's that. I don't think that's hyperbole at all. That is where an alpha receiver's targets tend to go in today's NFL, and he will command targets. So I think, like Anthony said, you got to wipe away those last 2 years. That was very well stated. But you can take what you saw on film of what he's capable of doing and understand that if he's being utilized the proper way, which I have every reason to believe that will be the case, Drake London, in our draft, that Anthony and I did a draft on March 15th, he went as wide receiver 19, I believe, in that one. So he even went higher than, and that ADP is going to keep jumping up. But again, I still think if you're all in on him, we said top 12 type upside. So just be careful not to go crazy. But yes, if you could pull the trigger and grab him, that's a way to go. Darnell Mooney was the other ad. Now, Darnell Mooney has shown he can play outside, he can play in the slot, but his season was 3 years ago. He went over 1,000 yards. That was the year the Bears, he was their alpha. He started out the season as a situational deep threat, and they needed him to be the guy. And he was winning short, intermediate. He was a very good receiver. And then the last two seasons, again, the coaching, the really, it was the coaching. Mooney was not integrated well. Obviously, DJ Moore was in the mix last year. Mooney had two lost seasons. Yeah. Now, I'm not saying he's a star, but I'm saying he's much closer to that 2021 player than he was to 2022 and 23. Now, as we move to an offense we know will throw the ball, he's the clear number two. Drake London's going to draw the attention. Mooney runs a sub 4.440. Great for deep passes, but he could do more than that. As to where we're going to draft, and that's where it's going to get interesting. What are your expectations for Darnell Mooney as the number two in this offense?
You know, I like what you said, that he's closer to that player that we've seen earlier in his career, in primarily 2021, wide receiver, 27 fantasy points per game, saw 140 targets. That was the best version that we've seen of Darnell Mooney. And he was asked to be the number one wide receiver, and that's not really him. But he's not going to be in that role because you have Drake London. You also have Kyle Pitts, who's a, we'll talk about in a few minutes, I'm sure. He's a mismatched nightmare. So Darnell Mooney, we already know, could take the top off of the defense. He had 95th percentile, 40-yard dash score coming out of college. And I think he's the perfect complement to a somewhat possession receiver, 6'4", Drake London. So when it comes to fantasy production, if you look where you could potentially get him, I have his FFPC ADP somewhere in the 150s. In best ball, I think that's a perfect draft spot, and I'm willing to reach about a round to grab him because I'm going to be extremely bullish on this Falcons offense.
Now, the third receiver, and this will be interesting to many, they trade for Rondale Moore. Now, Rondale Moore, look, he played every game last year, but he wasn't productive. The prior year, his second year, he had 8 games, and he was showing signs of a second-year breakout. But he never was truly used well in Arizona. There are times they'd use him as a runner, then they'd back off. Here's the point I want to make. Zach Robinson, I'll keep repeating this, comes over from Sean McVay. They, the Rams, were near the top of the league in pre-snap motion. You remember Cooper Kupp moving all over the place, Puka Nacua moving all over the place. That pre-snap motion is very important for the quarterback. It shows him information pre-snap about how the defense is planning to set up a play. Rondale Moore, of those three receivers, Drake London, Darnell Mooney, and Rondale Moore, Rondale Moore is the guy who is a natural for putting him in motion. You could screen him out of motion. You could give him a jet sweep, or you could just clear out the defense, because even though he's very small, he has excellent speed. And I do think they traded, the Falcons did, for Rondale Moore with the expectation of the heavy motion. Now, fantasy, I think it's going to be very tough to bank on him week in, week out, because we haven't even gotten to Bijan Robinson yet or Kyle Pitts. But I do think from an NFL standpoint, Rondale Moore is going to be much more useful than he will be for fantasy. That said, if it's 190, 210 picks into a draft, if you're looking to stack a team in a best ball contest and you're looking just to work with the Falcons, there could be a couple of weeks in there in which he spikes. Anything on Rondale Moore?
Yeah, certainly a better best ball draft pick than redraft, because, you know, in your redraft or even dynasty, we're probably going to be banking on injury to get week in and week out production from Rondale Moore, where obviously in best ball, it's, you know, you don't have to set a lineup. And the weeks he does pop, because he is going to give you probably 3 to 4 weeks of spike production, and you don't want to have to worry about that. Best ball handles that for you. So, yeah, depending on, you know, the way the draft is going and where he falls, because he is going to fall, I'm willing to take a few shots on Rondale Moore.
Now, if you're in season and Rondale Moore is not drafted in your redraft league, and there's an injury to Darnell Mooney, or he misses time for some reason, Rondale Moore could potentially move into a more voluminous role. But like Anthony said, right now in a regular redraft league, it's really tough to go the Rondale Moore route. Now, Kyle Pitts, do we even know what he is at this point? 1,000 yards as a rookie. Obviously, only had like one touchdown, I believe. They weren't scoring. Not his fault, certainly. And then the next year, Arthur Smith just very silly with the play calling. And here is the problem with the play calling. Kyle Pitts, even last year, was 99th percentile in average depth of target. That's wrong. That's terrible. Because they were only throwing him, not only, but all these downfield passes. You want to mix it up. This just Kyle Pitts player is a great athlete. Get the ball in his hands. Intermediate area, short area, mix it up. Too many deep shots. They were low percentage passes from the get-go. There were bad quarterbacks making those throws. And then there was word last year that Pitts' knee wasn't quite recovered from the 2022 injury. Don't know how reliable or truthful that was. But all that said, Pitts has a new opportunity. And we did say Mooney is the number two receiver. Is there a possibility, though, that Kyle Pitts could be the second highest targeted Falcon? Or what are your thoughts on Pitts going in?
Yes, there's a possibility because, you know, Kyle Pitts, when he came out of college, he had all the hype in the world. Like he was going to be the next, you know, Hall of Fame tight end coming out of college. And he hasn't lived up to it. But like we've used this narrative now for Rondale Moore, Drake London and Darnell Mooney. They've all come from situations and quarterbacks that weren't exactly great. And now they're kind of put into this. It's like a stew of players. We're just waiting for them to get in the right situation, a right quarterback to pop. And Kyle Pitts could be the juggernaut. Like I love London. Well, Kyle Pitts is the other part here where let's go back to what Kirk did in Minnesota, and was he able to support the elite receiver and elite tight end? Well, he had Hockenson and Justin Jefferson, and even Addison was popping a little bit this year. So depending on how this offense looks, yeah, Kyle Pitts could be the second most targeted player. He just needs to live up to his potential. Going back to that rookie year, all 17 games, just over 1,000 yards, only one touchdown. And you know, it's still the tight end position. It does take them a little bit of time to flourish. So, you know, to me, if it doesn't happen this year for Kyle Pitts, I don't think it ever happens.
That would be an accurate statement because it would seem to be an optimal situation. Now, understand some of those, the Rams offenses, Tyler Higbee was an afterthought, yes. But then we go to the Kevin O'Connell version when he went to Minnesota, as you said, and TJ Hockenson was prominently used. So a smart coach will say, oh, I have this level of talented player, therefore I need to make sure this works. So I lean more on the side that Kevin O'Connell will see in Kyle Pitts, yeah, a player that you have to use to create mismatches and make your offense lethal. But remember, there is always a chance that Zach Robinson doesn't interpret it that way, so there's a little bit of added risk. I want to finish out the Falcons. I know a long time on the team, but this is a big deal. Bijan Robinson. So last year was a good season. It was a very good rookie season. Fantasy managers maybe didn't get what they expected. We were spending a top six or seven or top 10 pick on him. But here's why I'm excited about Bijan Robinson. Let me turn back a minute. Here's what happened last year. So we were excited for Robinson, not just because of the talent, but because Arthur Smith and his running game. Well, what happened last year in the NFL, every offseason, they kind of make unilateral adjustments. One of the big defensive adjustments last year was understanding that teams were having success running against light boxes. So across the league, there were more simulated pressures. There were more gap shooting techniques to stop the running game, despite having fewer defenders. And across the league, we saw a lot of success for that. Arthur Smith had no counterpunch. He stayed with his zone running game. That wasn't only zone, but it was a lot of zone. And zone was largely figured out. So Robinson didn't have an optimal season. Here's where I'm excited. If the new offensive coordinator, Zach Robinson, comes in and he learned from McVay last year, what Sean McVay did last year, remember, Kyren Williams went off. Why did he go off? He's not a special back. Well, what McVay realized was he knew the defenses were going with this gap shooting approach. So what McVay did, he went to the duo run scheme, which is downhill. It completely works against light boxes shooting gaps. And so Kyren Williams has this massive season. We also know that he was used as a bell cow back. Now, maybe they didn't have a reliable number two, but I think that Bijan Robinson is going to see as much work as he can handle as a runner, a receiver, and a red zone threat. And I have to be optimistic that Zach Robinson will use that duo scheme as well for Bijan Robinson. The league will not yet adjust to duo because not enough teams were doing it. Thoughts on Bijan?
you know, my initial reaction to Bijan with this system is that it you know, Todd Gurley, right? Because we're making all these comparisons to the, you know, the Sean McVay offense. And I get it. Gurley was a while ago, but that was really the last time Sean McVay and his coordinators had that elite talent of a back. Now we have Bijan Robinson. I think we see a little bit of less Tyler Allgeier and a lot more Bijan Robinson with this new system. He's also versatile, right? Like, he can catch passes out of the backfield, which is something he did really well last year as well. This could be, you know, and people were a little bit disappointed on Bijan last year because of the usage, because they had Allgeier and sometimes Cordarrelle Patterson in a game or two vulturing touchdowns. None of that's going to happen this year. I think it's all systems go for Bijan Robinson. And, you know, personally, I'm willing to take him as high as the second back off the board.
100%. So fantasy managers, think about it this way. There are some possible things that can go wrong. Zach Robinson may not bring in the style of offense the same way McVay did. He may have his own twist. They may not work. There may be a growth period. But there is a real chance that this becomes one of the top offenses in the league very quickly. Anthony said it. They spent heavy draft capital on Bijan Robinson, on Drake London. Now they have a quarterback. They have playmakers that can – and Kyle Pitts, they spent a high first-round pick on him. They have three, like, top 10 NFL draft picks in that offense with a quarterback.
And again, let's not forget – their offensive line, I feel like it goes under the radar. You know, Matthews, Bergeron, Dahlman, McGarry, and Lidstrom, that's a solid group, right? It almost reminds me like when the Lions a couple years ago, they were compiling from the inside out offensively. Well, I almost feel like the Falcons could be that next Lions team that all of a sudden, hey, where did this team come from?
You know, 2 years ago, that Falcons line graded as elite because Arthur Smith was ahead of the league and the league hadn't adjusted his running scheme. So they were graded extremely high. Last year, I had them about a C+ for the run and a C+ for the pass. And that's good. And that's very good. Like you said, this was a very good line and they were working with the deck stacked against them because Arthur Smith had not accounted for how leagues would handle their rushing game. So that line has upward mobility, as Anthony said, in this new situation. Hey, did you ever think back to the golden days of fantasy football? You know, when it was all about the love of the game, the camaraderie, and yes, the bragging rights. Well, our friends at On Demand DFS are bringing those days back with their revolutionary app that's changing the game of fantasy for fans everywhere. Gone are the days of confusing entry fees, playing against unknown masses, or juggling multiple apps to trash talk with your league mates. On Demand DFS is here to streamline your fantasy football experience, making it more about strategy, fun, and most importantly, the community. With On Demand DFS, you can create a contest in seconds, invite your friends, and you're off to the races. No entry fees, no gimmicks, just pure fantasy football bliss. And here's the kicker. You're not limited to current season players. Imagine crafting your dream lineup from over 5,000 NFL legends and today's stars using real historical data to simulate the action. And for those who hate the wait, you'll love Turbo Mode. Contests wrap up in minutes, not hours, keeping the excitement going all week long. Download the On Demand DFS app now and get started with a 30-day free trial. Dive into a fantasy football experience that's rich in history, strategy, and most importantly, fun. It's time to create your legacy with the ultimate lineup of legends and live out your fantasy football dreams like never before. All right, Anthony, our next team is the Eagles, and we promise we will spend far less time on the rest of these teams, but the Falcons had so many top-to-bottom changes, we just had to have a longer discussion on them. The Eagles, it was really one big ad. It was Saquon Barkley. Now, they lose their center, Jason Kelce, to retirement, and that is a blow, but the line should still be well above average. They have talent across that line. Yes, Kelce we miss, especially on the tush push, if they're even going to use that anymore, but he was the linchpin, he and Jalen Hurts, at making that work. They did add edge rusher, Bryce Huff, which helped. Defensively, they had some losses, but nothing crazy. They did lose DeAndre Swift, obviously, because they brought Barkley in. Here's the one thing before I get you talking about them. What they do bring in, they got rid of Brian Johnson, the offensive coordinator, in my opinion, did a horrific job with the Eagles, and they bring in Kellen Moore. Now, before we roast Kellen Moore, understand he had three games with the Chargers last year. That offense was ripping. They were piling points up and moving the football. Kellen Moore's main point is he wants to use a vertical passing attack to challenge the defense and stretch them out and then open up underneath. You open up the run game. You open up everything else. But it starts with the downfield game. Well, he has Jalen Hurts, a good line. Hurts has a great arm. And you have A.J. Brown. That is the beginning of where you have the verticality. I think it starts there. And now the difference is you go from having DeAndre Swift at 4.6 yards per carry, but he had very little vision at the second level. With that line, there was a lot of meat on the bone. Saquon Barkley offers them ability to get to that second level and third level at depth as a receiver, add him to the receiving mix, throw him in with Devontae Smith, throw him in with Dallas Goedert. They're thin. But what are your thoughts on how the offense of the Eagles will benefit with both Kellen Moore and Saquon Barkley?
You know, as a Cowboys fan, I know Kellen Moore well. Do I love what Kellen Moore did with the Chargers last year? No, but he had to overcome a lot, especially with the injuries at the wide receiver position. And, of course, Eckler wasn't playing well. There was a lot. I just don't know if that was the true form of Kellen Moore I was used to in Dallas. And I think this nucleus of players in Philly from top to bottom, this offense has it all. I'm not going to be a happy camper when they have to match up and come back to Dallas. So I love the Kellen Moore addition. And we go to Saquon. And Saquon is another one of these players. When we look at his past body of work, there's going to be some negative press coming from the fantasy football community. Well, you know, he's been banged up. He's getting older. Is he worth that high draft compensation? And what they're not paying attention to, well, look what the situation he was in with the New York Giants, where he was always the focal point. He was more than likely facing stacked boxes since he came into the NFL. No real threats at wide receiver, certainly not at quarterback, and one of the worst perennial offensive lines. And still Saquon Barkley, when it comes to fantasy, he's been an RB1 of fantasy points per game in every year but 2020, where he was hurt, and then 2021 coming off the injury, and he only played in 13 games. Every other year, he was the RB9 fantasy points per game or better, including two top five finishes. Now we put this guy in Philly, and I'll go back to this narrative I keep using. It just reminds me of when CMC, you know, he had his naysayers when he first went to San Francisco. Injuries, and again, coming from Carolina, similar to the Giants, not the greatest franchise, not the greatest supporting cast around them. And you just drop him into the right system with the right nucleus of players around him, and we have the best fantasy player on the planet until the gas runs out. We could potentially see the 2.0 version with Saquon and Philly.
You know, I'd want to back up. Earlier on, and I don't know how much of this I said and didn't, when I said Kellen Moore had the offense humming, it was through 3 weeks when he had Mike Williams, and I need to qualify that. When he had Mike Williams and he had his full complement, you know, and even though Austin Eckler got hurt in week one, that offense was scoring points. And then once Mike Williams went down, Eckler had the high ankle already. He was out till week six. And then, obviously, they had issues throughout. That was when it went south. But Kellen Moore, when they had their players in receiving game, that's when I said they were humming. So I apologize if I misworded that a bit. Back to what Anthony said, it is a wonderful array of talent they have at the skill positions. I want to point out that defense. I do not expect the defense to be any better than it was last year. Last year was the spine of the defense was a problem. And then Darius Slay and James Bradbury both had down seasons. Now, it's possible they're aging, but cornerback play isn't sticky year to year. It's possible one or both of them play a little better, but they still have those issues at linebacker and at safety, and teams are going to score points on them. And this is important because Philly is going to have to score points to win, and they are in position to do that. But the thing is, if a defense oversells the deep passing game, Barkley's a bigger factor. And teams are never going to stack the box. Obviously on a short yardage situation, you might, but other than that, when you've got A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, and even Dallas Goedert, the defense is in a real bind because stopping the passing game is paramount in the NFL. And if Barkley is being used creatively in the run game, and again, even without Jason Kelce, that line should be good. Like Anthony said, the sky is the limit for Barkley, especially at PPR, because I do think they're going to find ways to get him involved as a receiver. Kellen Moore has thrown the ball to his running backs. We've seen Ezekiel Elliott put up big reception numbers. Tony Pollard had a massive season 2 years ago as a receiver in the explosive element of the game. And we know there were times he lined up Pollard on the outside. Remember that Philly game where he had a long catch down the sideline. So it's in Kellen Moore's skill set to use Saquon Barkley more than a dump off option. So I think the Eagles understood they couldn't fix their defense, but they could add an element to their offense to make them be a team who can outscore just about anybody. So investing in the Eagles, and I see AJ Brown falling to the very end of the first round. Look, what happened last year, he was on pace for a 2,000-yard season about halfway through, and then Brian Johnson couldn't understand when defense made adjustment to them. Oh, you got to make adjustments back. He never did. A.J. Brown can put up an elite season with the very best receivers in the game. And if there's five picks gone in a draft and A.J. Brown's on the board, I would definitely begin to consider him there. Any final thoughts?
No, I love that take on A.J. Brown and the potential value you're getting. Remember, you know, you go back to his years, even with the Titans, where he flashed and he wasn't getting a lot of volume. He's that type of player where he doesn't necessarily need the volume to put up the big numbers, but he's going to get that in Philly. And I think we see not only a bounce back from A.J. Brown, this whole entire Philly offense, it could be dangerous. When I say dangerous, like their Super Bowl year dangerous.
All right. We're going to talk about more teams after we take a short break.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy? Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, let's get on to the Carolina Panthers next. This is a very interesting offseason, Anthony. It's important to point this out. Overall, they did have some really good additions, but they lost a lot of players. The players they lost, though, primarily on the defensive side. And this was a defense that had some talent. They did bring in some replacements, but I think the defense is going to take a massive step backward. But what that means is they may give up so many points, their offense will at least be in position to be able to score more points. Now, whether that happens or not is a problem, because we started out Bryce Young, last year's number one pick. He had about four 200-yard games. Those were like in the first third or a little more of the season. Down the stretch, he had that game against Green Bay with 300. Otherwise, he wasn't hitting 200 yards in a game. Now, what happened? Their offensive line was terrible. Both of their tackles, Ike Ekwonu, Taylor Moton, they didn't play well. The interior of the line between injuries and ineffectiveness was terrible. So of the adds the Panthers made, they brought in two guards. Robert Hunt from the Dolphins, very good run and pass protector. Now, the other guard they brought in, Damian Lewis from the Seahawks, is a little better in replacement level. Average is a pass protector, which is probably better than what they had. Run blocker, nothing special there at all. But they do bring that back. And there is a chance that Ike Ekwonu, now with another year in, that he could make a bit of a leap. Taylor Moton has been better. So it's possible that Bryce Young gets decent protection, which is what he didn't have last year. The other thing is the trade for Deontay Johnson. Last year, Adam Thielen, what was he, 34, was their lead receiver. And that's a problem because we know he had that great run, but you don't want Adam Thielen as your number one receiver. No offense to Adam Thielen, wonderful player for a lot of years. But Deontay Johnson gets open in a nanosecond, and that is going to be a best friend to a quarterback. Now, we still worry about the short quarterback and the sight in the middle of the field and how that works up. But Deontay Johnson can get open starting from the outside before he gets all the way into the wash. There's a lot of ways he can get open. I still think they need more help, and if they don't get help in the draft, that's going to be a problem. But I think overall, between the guard additions and adding Deontay Johnson, it at least helps their offense. I'm still not excited about them because Chuba Hubbard's the lead back. What are your thoughts on the Panthers' offense?
Hard for me to buy in, right? And yes, they made some nice additions where it should, on paper, improve, especially with Deion Johnson. And you said all the right things, how he can get open. And normally this guy, you know, he's seen north of 144 targets 3 years in a row going into last year where he had 87 and only played 13 games. So he's certainly a volume receiver, certainly somebody you want to target in PPR. But my biggest worry is the quarterback, is Bryce Young. They brought in the quote-unquote quarterback head coach, helped out Baker Mayfield, but he's still a first-year head coach coming over. You know, Bryce Young, is he a little rattled from last season? You know, as quarterback's a psychological position, and these guys are praised since middle school. And all of a sudden you get to the NFL, all the hype, first overall pick, and you struggle mightily. Can he shake that? Can he take any type of step forward? You know, what good is Deontay Johnson's separation if he can't hang in the pocket or scramble out of the pocket and get the ball to him? So I have a lot of question marks still about this offense.
And I want to point out Dave Canales, who's the head coach. He was the offensive coordinator, as you said, Anthony, at Tampa Bay. Last year going into the season, I actually had Baker Mayfield in every super flex team I had. Wow. Drafted my third quarterback. But it ended up for the wrong reasons. Dave Canales' book was he would use play action effectively. And I thought that would really help Mayfield with Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. It's not what happened at all. First of all, he miscast Godwin, put Godwin on the outside. Godwin needed to be in the slot. I don't care if Trey Palmer is a slot guy. Chris Godwin has to find a way into that slot. That was a strike against him. Second thing was all that play action we expected, 22nd in the league, below average. That stunned me because Mayfield, we learned in Cleveland, when he was under play action, he was great. And the other thing was pre-snap motion. We thought Canales would bring that in. He was at the bottom of the league. So why did Baker Mayfield work out? Well, here's why. The offensive line of the Buccaneers pass protected better than anybody reasonably expected. We expected it to be a real problem. We thought the play action would bail him out. For whatever reason, that line gelled and they protected him. The other thing is Mayfield loved throwing downfield. And my goodness, when you got a big bodied receiver, 6'5", 231, and Mike Evans, that allows you to make some mistakes downfield and get him as completions and touchdowns. So I think that Baker Mayfield succeeded, but for the wrong reasons. Dave Canales, I don't think he helped him as much as he could have. And so I'm a little nervous.
But he's given credit for it.
He's given a ton of credit for it because people expected nothing out of Baker Mayfield, right? And when he succeeded, yes, Dave Canales, and that's why he got a job, Anthony. That's what you're saying. You're saying he got credit and he got a head coaching job. But if you look at underlying what he did, I think Mayfield just has some ability. And anyway, you're right about Bryce Young. I'm nervous about him because I said last year, based on his size for durability issues and sightline issues, I thought he'd have to be an outlier to just be a good quarterback. So we're still betting on it. Is it possible he will? Yes, because outliers happen, but they don't happen often, which is why I didn't bet on Bryce Young last year, and I'm nervous this year. Last thing I'll say is this, though. I will bet on Deontay Johnson in fantasy drafts, and I do think he will be underdrafted because if Adam Thielen was able to have the production that Adam Thielen did, I will tell you this. Deontay Johnson separates five times better than Adam Thielen and will be more reliable, can do way more after the catch. So I will bet on Deontay Johnson because he's the volume guy. Jonathan Mingo, they tried to force some targets. He's either a developmental project or he's not going to hit. So last thing before we're out on this team, Deontay Johnson, how in or out are you on him in drafts?
I'm reasonably in. He's not a guy like a Drake London or even a Darnell Mooney where, you know, what I said about Mooney, I'm willing to reach, you know, 10, 12 picks to get him. I'll get Deontay Johnson that cost because I think he has a very high floor because he's going to get the volume and he's going to give you those receptions. That's great in PPR. But are we going to get the Deontay Johnson that we saw back in, 2021, where he was a wide receiver 8 in fantasy points per game, or even back in 2020, where he's a wide receiver 22 in fantasy points per game? Because, you know, 2022, he had the volume, 147 targets, second most of his career, but wide receiver 39. They weren't great targets. He wasn't very efficient with them.
So you're reasonably in on him. I am very in on him, especially if I need a receiver at the area of the draft he's going. Again, I just think this is a volume opportunity. And I mentioned earlier the losses on defense for the Panthers. I think they're going to have to throw way more than they really want to. So we'll see what happens there. Now, I will highlight the Buffalo Bills next. But there's on offense, they added Curtis Samuel. We'll talk about him in a minute. They added Matt Collins. So you're like, well, why would you make them a big winner on offense? Because they lost a ton of players on defense. Terrell Dodson was an excellent linebacker for them. Dane Jackson played so well at corner. Ronald Darby was good enough for depth at corner for them. And Tre'Davious White's gone, and you know he tore his Achilles last year anyway. Jordan Poyer, the safety's gone. This defense could go from being decent to being bad really, really fast. And Von Miller looked like he was done last year. So all that said, the Bills may have to score more points than ever. The big question coming in. So Gabe Davis is gone. I honestly think Mac Hollins is a significant upgrade as a situational deep threat. Just go downfield. And we saw with the Raiders a couple of years ago, he could perform in that. And if you watch over the years, when Mac Hollins would get a deep shot thrown his way, he's very good at the catch point, way more aggressive than Gabe Davis. And nobody's going to be defending him, assuming as of today, Stephon Diggs is back, Khalil Shakir, and Curtis Samuel. Here's the big question, though, Anthony. Curtis Samuel played about 70% slot with Carolina. Washington last year. Curtis Samuel's a slot receiver. He can line up outside, but that's not where he's best. He's best used in motion, used creatively. Khalil Shakir played also over 70% in the slot last year. Well, there's one slot receiver, and Mac Hollins is probably the situational deep threat. He's probably a full-time player because that role has been in that offense for years. Assuming Stephon Diggs comes back, what are we doing? We both think Khalil Shakir is an excellent player. Curtis Samuel, used correctly, is an excellent player. And middle of the field, Dalton Kincaid really became a factor. So we know Josh Allen is still like top of the rock for fantasy. But what are we doing with this receiving core in fantasy drafts?
I'm treading lightly, and I'm very high on Khalil Shakir. But, you know, as you keep noting, he does a lot of the same things that Curtis Samuel does, and they also burnt Curtis Samuel. Are there going to be times where you can run with two slot receivers? Yes, but you're not running that a significant enough time in most cases to where you're going to get significant fantasy production from both. And, you know, I like that you said that Mac Hollins could potentially be a full-time player in that Gabe Davis role. I like Mac Hollins more than most. I think people scoff at me when I say that, and this could be a nice situation for him. And of course, what's going on with Stephon Diggs? You know, is there still a chance, and I get he has that hefty contract, is there still a chance he could potentially get moved? So I think there's a lot of moving parts here where the only definites in this offense are probably Josh Allen and the running back Cook. I don't know if there's a lot of receivers where I'll take them at a value. I'll take them if they slip, but I'm certainly not reaching for anybody, and that's including Stephon Diggs.
And there's nothing to base this on, but don't be surprised on NFL draft night if Stephon Diggs gets moved somewhere.
Yeah.
If somebody is in a win now mode and if they have the cap space to bring him in, and I don't even know what team that would be, but there could be a team saying, you know what, we got to make a move here. And it would be the time to do that. I'm not, again, no full prediction on that, but it would not surprise me if that happened. So all that said, James Cook, Ty Johnson is the number two on the depth chart at running back. And he's a nice little pass catching back, but he is basically, don't tell, I mean, obviously he's an NFL player, but he's not somebody who's going to be a cementing role. He's bounced around a little bit here. So James Cook, although I don't think they want to overuse him, if they don't bring somebody else in, he could be seeing 18 to 20 touches a week. Any final quick thought there?
Is James Cook capable of handling that type of a workload? That's the thing, because I'd be all in, and I like James Cook. Excellent player. I think we saw him peak a little bit, especially down a stretch last year once they moved off of Dorsey. So depending on what they do, I guess it would be in the NFL draft, because running backs are pretty dry right now unless they're trying to kick the tires on Latavius Murray again.
Oh, man. You got four tires. Two of them are flat, and one of them is 15 pounds, but he still can play.
I'd take Murray in Dallas right now.
Oh, no. Yeah, you would.
I'm not running back. We don't have a running back.
Very quickly, I want to touch on this last team, Baltimore Ravens. We were very excited. They bring in Derrick Henry. So now Lamar Jackson has a run game. Now, the receiving game, we're still questionable. We know we got Zay Flowers. We love what he did last year, but Odell Beckham's gone. He kind of lost gas last year, and Rashad Bateman was terrible, and John Harbaugh's talking him up. He'll be the starter. Okay, if that's the case, what we saw last year was very problematic. They still have Mark Andrews. But here's the thing with Derrick Henry. They bring him in, and he was still over 70th percentile broken tackle rate. He was 86th percentile yards after contact, but he was playing on a terrible Titans team, and so he hasn't lost anything. Here's what I'm worried about, Anthony. They lost their very good offensive tackle, Morgan Moses. They lost both of their starting guards, Kevin Zeitler, who was excellent. John Simpson was ordinary. Three-fifths of their line is gone. Now they keep their center, Leonard Baum, and they keep their left tackle. And I don't know why his name evades me. He's heard every year 20 times. I forgot his name.
Ronnie Stanley.
Thank you, Ronnie Stanley. So, but they lost a lot of line. I still think, though, with the mobile quarterback, Derrick Henry is going to bring an element to this team they haven't had. Quick thoughts on how the Ravens' offense will be improved with the addition of Derrick Henry.
This Ravens team, right? Like, when was the last time that they had a reliable running back? And I like Dobbins, wasn't reliable, can never stay on the field. You know, even going to years past, this was a football team that was bringing in Devonta Freeman off the street, and he was having some success. Even last year, I was really high on Dobbins. Once again, goes down, and we're using guys like Keaton Mitchell sparingly, and Justice Hill saw some success, and of course, Gus Edwards. Well, if they're having success in this offense, and I get they lost some incredible players in the offensive line, and I get that Stanley is a little bit banged up here and there during the regular season, but you brought up what Derrick Henry did last season, and last year's version of the Titans, probably the worst offensive line since Henry's been there. Skill position players like Burks, all sorts of banged up, you know, quarterbacks in and out of the lineup. And Derrick Henry still managed to be the running back 16 of fantasy points per game, the RB8 in PPR overall. And you bring up some of those metrics when it comes to, you know, ninth and evaded tackles. He was a number, this is a, you know, 29, 30 year old back. He was second amongst running backs in breakaway runs. And then we had number 10 in yards created. He still has some gas left in that tank. And even with the losses on this offensive line, when you think about the entire picture and package with Lamar and the other assets, this is a vast upgrade over what he had in Tennessee. So, yeah, I'm pushing the chips in on Derrick Henry. You're not going to have to overpay. Like, if you want that, like, I get Saquon and CMC, they have a certain type of seal you're going to have to overpay for. But I have a feeling people are going to be a little bit worried about these changes in Baltimore. And, well, what if this year Henry falls off? You might be able to grab Henry at a nice price. And I think he has 1 year of special left in him. And when I say special, as a top five running back.
So going into last year, Lamar Jackson had missed time in the two prior seasons. If you notice last year, it wasn't Lamar Jackson's number getting called at the goal line lot. Gus Edwards scored 13 rushing touchdowns. Justice Hill had red zone rushing attempts. So Derrick Henry is going to get the red zone work. They're not going to try to get Lamar Jackson hurt when you got the big dog who you can hand the ball to, and he's going to be able to run over people. I don't think we're going to see Lamar Jackson taking it from the 2-yard line unless there's a trick play and they just have to leverage something. But I don't think that's a staple. So I think Henry's touchdowns could be – he always gets double digits. I mean, literally, it's like 12 a year. Yeah. I think he had 10 in the year he broke his foot and missed half the season. So he's like a lock for double-digit touchdowns. And look, I know everybody gets sick of me saying this, but it's so important to point it out. Lamar Jackson is, again, the hyper-mobile RPO threat quarterback. And those special quarterbacks, when they use RPO elements, it freezes linebackers for that nanosecond. And ordinary running backs definitely benefit. Very seldom do we see an elite back with this RPO boost. We didn't see it last year for Jonathan Taylor. We were hoping to see it with Richardson. They never played together because Richardson got hurt. But we're going to see those advantages go to Derrick Henry. And then the play action on the RPO when the defense is kind of moving up and Lamar reads that, there it's going to open up their passing game. Because Todd Monken wasn't able to fully get the book open at his office. Mark Andrews missed a big chunk of the season. Yeah. So this is the year. And look, Lamar had that season, what, 4 years ago, where that MVP season, the numbers are through the roof. Don't be surprised, even with the losses in the offensive line, that this offense with Derrick Henry and that element can make defenses defend them so differently that Lamar could have a passing season that somewhat rivals that season. Final words on the Ravens.
Going to be a very good football team, exciting to watch. And I think, you know, some losses on defense too, where I'm not saying that they're going to be that bad or they're going to have to outscore you, but I think they might have to score a little bit more this year.
You're right. They did lose Geno Stone, they'll have another replacement at safety. Patrick Queen. You know, they used him in a good pass rush role. Definitely with Roquan was able to come over and do the thumping work that Queen couldn't. But you're right. Those are two losses, and they will have to overcome those a bit. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast, and we will be back next week. Please join us then. For Anthony Servino, I'm Jim Coventry.